Scott Wells over here for a Magic Word Podcast. And this is day three, and we're getting ready to go into a panel discussion led by Dave McGee. I got David and Walter Blaney here, too.
Yep.
But David, yes, you have to say.
Well, I was just saying to you that my biggest thing that I want people, especially these young people, to take away, not just the young people, but everybody, that the inception of the Magic Castle was in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And there's always been a unique mixture of magic and actors and movies and television. And I think as magicians, we tend to separate ourselves from them. They're actors. We're all.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. But it, I think that it hurts us all the way around. And I'm on a quest for the upcoming years to get these guys to just to own the room when they're there. I mean, we're every bit as much a celebrity. Mm-hmm. It's perception. We talked about that. That was my magic word.
We did. Perception, exactly. But I think also this is promulgated by the media, specifically that they do not recognize magic as being a legitimate art form.
And that's we've got to do something to change that.
How do you do that?
That's the big thing. That's what we're going to talk about today. That's what we're going to talk about today. But when I go to these celebrity events, to be quite honest with you, and not to sound arrogant, I go in there, the celebrity, and they treat me just like they do Samuel L. Jackson, Daniel Bowen. I'm in the deal with them, the same deal. They don't know any difference.
Yeah.
So that's where I think it's got to start. You've just got to sell yourself. I'm the best mentalist, or I'm the best magician. I'm the guy.
The guy.
And when you start wowing them, because you can do something. Burton often tells me when we go to these events, I can sign autographs and I can meet and greet. He says, but boy, you go out and do that and just blow their minds at that night, and all these celebrities are sitting watching you, and you're the star. And he says, I can't do. I said, yeah. I said, think about that. You know, and he can't get up and act a scene.
They're good just for 2 hours, and you're good.
Yeah.
You know, for
the whole time.
When you say Burton again, that's not Lance Burton. It's Burt Gilliam.
Gilliam.
Yeah,
Burton
from
Gilliam.
Blazing Saddles.
That's
people
right.
Listening out there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So my goal, and I'm gonna state that, is to change that. I really wanted that to change, and we've got to start with ourselves. Though we've got to start, I guess, with that old cliche, psychological thing. You got to love yourself. Mm-hmm. But I think it's too many of us just let these people beat us up, and we're every bit as good. We're worth every bit as much. So that's my mantra for now. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that it does start with the magician, but also that they have to push through the media to try to get that mindset changed.
They do,
and that's going to be the difficult thing. You know, starting with your local newspaper, you know, in your hometown,
yep,
of having to come out and trying to get rid of that, I guess,
stigma.
Children's stigma of,
yes,
thinking,
sir,
tricks are for kids.
That's absolutely right.
You know, because movies
right.
are for human beings in general. You
well,
know,
you look at you people like Walter. I mean, some of the greatest television shows ever. Now, how did that change?
Yeah, Mike Douglas, Dinosaur. You were on
Ed Sullivan, Ed Sullivan. All of these different shows.
Johnny Carson.
How did that change? We were great because you had people like Johnny Carson. Now you have a mindset of a Jay Leno who hates magicians, mm-hmm, and doesn't like magic.
Yeah,
not a big magicians fan.
Remember, it was interesting. I thought a comment that Chip Romero made yesterday about whenever the Doug Henning came out, he said on December 25th in whatever year that was, 75 or whatever, that or 6, that the that if you were a magician, you were a nerd. But the very next day, on December 26th, suddenly, if you were a magician, you were cool because Doug Henning, you know, had like 30 million people that saw him on one of the
that
networks.
That was the star.
You know? Yeah.
But somewhere, we kind of let it slip back in because we
that's
had
right.
stars. You had Channing Pollock. Look, mm-hmm, at that guy. What a good look. He was a movie star and,
yep,
he was a magician.
John Calvert,
the same thing. We had these guys there, but somehow something happened. I think that will be interesting for somebody to really look back and kind of try to pinpoint where did it go? Where did it change? All these great guys were on these shows, these,
yeah,
big names. You hardly see magic on television anymore.
Yeah.
It's on talk shows. That's starting to change a little. Craig Ferguson with Jamie and Swiss bringing,
right,
him on more in the week they do. But see, people like Letterman do it almost as a spoofy thing.
Well, they had
Magic Week.
Had Magic Week, right, yeah.
Right, and then it's Elvis Lookalike Week. Well,
yeah,
then we're relegated to that same
that
thing
same
as a carnival
category,
type,
right,
thing. And
right,
that's not what I want. I mean, you see Fielding last night.
Yeah.
Fielding West could play any casino. I don't care where they are. The guy is hilarious. He's,
yes,
better on his game than I've ever seen. You see Rob Zabrecki last night?
Yeah.
What a new, fresh thing to see at a convention.
Right.
The character is so different and neat. That's what we've got to do. And I think now it's going to be up to these young people to change it. Look at Ricky Jay. Look at Ricky Jay's done.
Right.
But now, in
it's almost a different level. Sophisticated group of people, yeah.
It is. But there also, in my opinion, seems to be a disconnect from Ricky to the Magic community.
I can see
that. Why is that? That's got to change too. Somebody that's been given so much by so many, in my humble opinion, needs to be able to share. I wouldn't be where I'm at without Johnny Thompson's help in what I'm doing, the level that I've gotten to.
Fielding will say that as well.
Exactly. Yeah,
and a lot of people.
A lot of guys. Yeah, and I've learned so much from Burton Gilliam, how to treat other people as, you know, you'd be around a lot of these big celebrities and they snobs and they blow people off. You get around Burton and when you interview him later, you're going to feel like he's your best friend when you're 30.
Right away.
He'll hug you.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, he'll be done. That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
That's what we've got to do, too.
You know, I think for the most part, the people, including CEOs of organizations, that they get to the top of their field, whatever it is, whether it's in motion pictures or authors or whatever, are genuinely nice and congenial people. However, they usually start surrounding themselves with people to keep them away, because, you know, they are so nice that people start to take advantage of them.
That's
and they think, I'm your new best friend. They start getting in touch with them, call them or whatever.
Exactly.
And so they've got to have people. And so they're
keepers.
Not, they're keepers. And so I think that for the most part, that those guys have gotten to the level they are because of their personality skills and being able to interrelate with people.
Absolutely.
But actually, when you do talk with them, you know, for an example, George W. Bush was a friend of mine, and I've known him before he was president back in Midland, Texas.
Right.
Just a nice, congenial guy. But
Absolutely.
After he became president, I couldn't get past the seventh later close to him.
No, then that happens.
Yeah.
So in certain levels, that has to be. But I think in what we're doing, it can't be. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, we've got to be accessible. So.
Yeah.
That's my mantra.
Okay, well, very good.
All right.
I know you got a good inside. We're going to start this. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We're on our way.
I'll just add this. I've just been listening, and what David McGee has just said is one of the most important things I've heard in ages. And he can really say it well.
Yeah, in just a few moments, too.
Yeah, he's told the whole story of what's going on and how it needs to change. So I second the motion, is all I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I've been
endorsed by Walter Blaine.
I enjoyed this interview just listening.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Walter. Well, thanks for all you guys listening out there then, too. That was Walter Blaney. And, of course, you just heard David McGee. We're about to go inside and listen to panel discussion then with Daniel Baldwin and Burton Gilliam. That's right. Till later. Scotty out. So we just stepped inside just before the discussion starts, by the way, that just ran into Rob Zabrecki, just for my podcast, The Magic Word. I was going to say, Walter, you were saying he got a standing ovation. It was great to see him.
Yeah. It was the first time I've seen Rob Zabrecki, and I didn't know what he did, and I couldn't quite figure it from what I've heard, but I just knew it was going to be different.
Right.
And it is different, and it's wonderful. And then I was so pleased he got the standing ovation, which we all want to do.
That was right. It was just an automatic thing. I mean, it wasn't something that everybody kind of contrived. It's like all at once, everybody, you know. That doesn't happen too
often. Almost like there was just a pause, and then, wait, I've seen something different and great.
Never seen before,
and
right?
I'm going to stand up, and that's what you want.
That was very good. You know that I had read about you, of course, the cover article, you know, from the magazine and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Virginia, of course.
Thank you,
And so I was anxious to see your act, and it was something weird. I kept saying to myself and thinking that it could be that you were just must have had a strange childhood, but then that's not necessarily the case. That's just a character.
Well, there's elements of that. You know, I think I've written myself a lot into the show, but there's a lot of things that are just kind of written to make the act provocative and hopefully interesting for people.
It truly is art. You know, I can tell you're an art lover. I'm assuming that you are based upon that. And that was my original major in college was art. And I could fully appreciate things we were doing. And I love abstract art. And I go to museums whenever I'm in towns to, you know, just on my own to go and visit whatever. And some of the things you're doing, I was thinking, that is so abstract and that is so cool and different. And off the wall and unexpected. I thought you were going to do this or that, you know, without tipping anything that you're doing your show. So when the listeners will hear this later, you know, that they're just going to have to go and make sure you see this. See, Rob, where are you going to be next, by the way?
Back at the Magic Castle for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And then go
that
to
seems
London.
Natural for you.
Yeah, it is. I'm from L.A., so it is pretty natural. And then I go to London for a couple shows over there in November.
You're going to work at the Magic Circle over there?
If they let me.
Okay. Have you got a lecture you do then as well? You're lecturing tomorrow morning, actually, here.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., exactly.
And what type of things? I mean, you talk about character development in your lecture, or what do you...
I do. I talk about presenting magic as theater, essentially.
You know, I think we may have to continue this later over here, because we're getting ready for this. Thank you, Rob, very much.
I want to do it. I want to do it.
Right,
I
hey,
it. And I feel
we
special.
We're going to be having the show start a little bit later, but we're kind of in between things. Just had the professional close-up show, and I'm here now with Chip Romero. Hi, Chip.
Hello, Scott. How are you? Thanks for having me, my man. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm glad we finally got a chance. We passed like ships in the night, you know, and said we'll get together later, and I'll see you, and we'll talk and everything. And
I have too many friends, man. I have to spread the social thin.
Spread the love.
I'm in Texas. I'm an honorary Texan.
Yes, you are. I don't think of you of Louisiana so much as I do over here with one of us, particularly since, you know, our association back in the Magic Island days and everything for so long.
We go back over 25 years, you and I.
Close,
no, 25
yeah.
would
25,
be real close.
Yeah.
At least 25. Yeah. Maybe 20. We go back a long way, my man.
But you were here giving us one of the highlights of the convention. That was, of course, the Doug Henning kind of background lecture and everything, and there were a lot of things you did not talk about. You kept it kind of light and everything, and for an example, not talking about his death and whatnot, and a couple people I know had asked later about that, and he did die at 52 years of age on...
Same age as Houdini. It was in February of 2000, and it was again, I left it out because I didn't want to talk about it.
Sure.
But since you're listening, he died of liver cancer, which is just, like, wrong because he never drank, never smoked, and he ate organic foods all of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of interesting, the same age as Houdini.
I have a question about Vetalan. Whatever happened? Remember for a while that he was going to be taken off? When I last met him, it was in St. Louis, and we were backstage, and he was into transcendental meditation, and he was kind of like at the end of his tour, and this would have been like in the late 70s, and he said, adios, I'm taking off to India and going to raise money and open Vetalan.
I know about as much as everybody else,
okay.
other than they were going to try to do it in Orlando, they were going to try to do it here, they were going to try to do it there, and of course it just never took
Nothing
off.
Nothing ever took off.
He tried, but
okay.
He
must have dropped a lot of money. I always wondered if someone had actually kind of been a shyster and, you know, took money from him. You know,
we'll never know that.
Well,
but I know
not.
That you can't open a transcendental meditation theme park next to Disney.
That was part of his thought.
Yes.
He was going to buy a lot of property and all that.
So that's it. It just never happened. Maybe wrong time in history. Who knows?
Now, the illusions that you have acquired, you procured those through his estate in auction. Was it Potter or?
It was. Okay, there was three auctions. There was the first auction where they just liquidated the warehouse. Then there was the second auction about the stuff that was his personal or his touring show, his close secrets, or his signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third auction happened in 1999. And that was when I left the celebrity cruises, and that's when I bought the bulk of it. I bought 8 of the 14 pieces of that auction.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go back to the second auction. I was lucky enough to acquire the Disembodied Princess complete, and then also the gold box that was used in his wedding, which is a gift from Johnny Gaughan.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next auction, I was on a ship, and that was the stuff. It had been stored now for like some 10 or 12 years. It had been stored like in a barn or whatever. It was stored.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug called and said, sell it. If I do get back in, we'll just rebuild. Because
right.
He always had Willie and Jim. He could always rely on them.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie and Jim built a lot of that stuff at the time. Because Henning's original illusions, they came from Owen.
Well, I mean, yeah.
He's
Bill Smith and Johnny.
Well, the originals were Johnny Les Smith. The originals.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about early on.
Yeah, okay.
Magic show and stuff. Yeah, they loved Owen. And then and they wore those props out. I mean, the Owen, the stack of the mismade girl, the shadow box. I mean, he wore those props out. And
yeah.
So in time, then Willie and rebuilt them.
Go bump in the night. Another one of his signature pieces.
Willie, and of course, again, Owen built the first one, but Willie, of course, built the last three. There were three of them, actually. There was three different size boxes, depending on the size of the tiger.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
There were three different bump boxes.
Did he actually own the livestock? Do you know? I mean, like the tigers and whatnot?
The tiger belonged to a friend of his, and I believe it was the friend and the tiger that just came along. Meaning, I'm sure he rented the tiger.
Rented the tiger, that's right.
But the tiger came with the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
But the trainer was a buddy.
Yeah, who traveled with him in his big shows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And did he do much traveling abroad? Was he as well-known overseas, England,
not
Europe?
Not to my knowledge. Originally, Willie told me that he moved to Holland because no one knew him there.
Now, Willie keeps referring.
Willie Kennedy. William Kennedy.
Kennedy,
which
okay.
would be his right arm, his builder. William Kennedy is, of course, one of the finest illusion builders in the world today. He builds
mm-hmm.
so much stuff out of aluminum. And I mean, his designs are phenomenal. I mean, Willie does some of the best work today in illusions.
But, again, from your knowledge, that most of his touring was here across the U.S.?
I'm 90% sure. I mean, he might have done a stop here or there, but
right.
But the majority was the eight television specials,
and it's Broadway.
In Broadway, the eight major television specials, and then there was touring because that's when he played the Hilton in Atlantic City,
mm-hmm.
but not a lot of touring. But he did go out on tours. I think he toured up to 4 months before he left Magic.
Do you think that he lost in popularity not so much because of the growing of David Copperfield, but he still had that hippie look from the '60s, and as things happened in the '70s, then David took over? Or?
I totally feel that way. I totally feel that Doug refusing,
did not change the time.
Refusing, exactly. I totally feel that way. Not cutting the hair, and it was, we were in the '80s now, and David came along, and David had that look of almost like the handsome man on a romance novel.
Yes.
Well,
mm-hmm.
who's not going to love that? The ladies mm-hmm. loved him.
He had nice little vignettes that told stories and everything.
Sure, sure, sure.
I always felt like Doug Henning, you know, did one unrelated trick after the other, you know, where Copperfield mm-hmm. kind of had a vignette.
Doug still had a beautiful theme. Everything was beautiful. The art direction, everything was beautifully themed. And Doug's magic did feel kind of wonder and,
yes.
And happy and poppy and mm-hmm. playful, whereas David was more serious. But we'll talk about Doug.
Yeah.
With the times, I think that hurt him. And last thing I'll say about David, when David vanished the Learjet, it was over. David had taken magic out of the theater.
Yes.
And that's just something that wasn't common. I'm just not the first to do it, but certainly when David went out in the dark of night and performed something outside of a theater that was too big to perform, that's when things really, the popularity certainly began taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Doug, he changed, Doug was looking in the transcendental meditation. Doug was looking at the Maharishi. He wanted to go be with the Maharishi in India.
Right.
And so basically, I think it was a combination of David's popularity rising with the times and Doug saying, I'm going to go into another direction. In other words, Doug did whatever he wanted to do. When he mm-hmm. decided that he was leaving Magic, he just left Magic. He made a phone call to William and said, all right, shut it down, shut all the offices down. And it was it. It was just a phone call and everything
right.
was shut down. And then it was, okay, get rid of everything from the warehouse. Now, I'll just give you, if you remember the special with Brooke Shields.
Yes.
They had that huge, the two pyramids, the big sets of steps and the scale.
Yes.
If my information's right, and I think it is, Franz Harari bought that illusion for $50.
Oh, my gosh.
And basically what they were saying is it cost Franz more to rent the trucks than it did the stuff that was in the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said, if you don't buy it, we're going to take chainsaws to it.
Just take it apart. And
because they didn't need it. They didn't want to store it anymore. It was over.
Yeah.
And then they kept that tour, that core touring show is what they kept.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that's my knowledge. I mean, I'm not an authority on Doug Henning, but I know an awful lot about Doug Henning.
Well,
and Doug and I were not personal friends. Not an authority. There's a difference, an expert and authority.
Yeah.
I just happen to be very, very well-read and very educated. And, of course, I've met plenty of people that were very close
and
to
me. And you'd met Doug and seen him?
I got, mm-hmm. my I'll tell you, okay, I will tell you, I will put this here. This is my great little story. I grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana. I knew nothing about show business, nothing at all. My family, nothing at all. I didn't know anything about comedy clubs. How do you get jobs? I knew nothing. My first birthday party was for a friend,
mm-hmm.
or for my parents' friend. It was $5. I mean, I still know nothing about show business. Anyway, I see Doug Henning on TV, completely changed my life. And we can't forget Mark Wilson as well. Mark Wilson, I was watching him, but still, it's when I got to that age, it was Mark Wilson, Bill Bixby, and then Henning all of a sudden is when the bomb just exploded.
Yeah.
And so I already liked Magic, but when I saw Henning, I was just completely entranced. So my mom would go to Vegas three or four times a year to see Elvis Presley, and she knew everybody. My mom loved the slot machines. I'm sure she gave Vegas plenty of her money. And so she comes back with a What's On in Vegas, which is the magazine of all the shows.
Yeah.
And she goes, look right there. Look what that says. And I said, it said, John Davidson, special guest Doug Henning. And I said, Mom, what does that mean? And she said, he's going to be there. And I said, no, that's that guy on TV. He doesn't work there. He works on TV.
Yeah.
And she said, he's going to be there. And then she said, don't worry, we're going. And
yeah.
That was the longest month of my life. And my mom loved the slot machines. My grandfather loved blackjack. Anyway, we were going so they could gamble, but they could take Chip to go see Doug. So I get there. We arrived at night, and it was in progress of the second show. So the second show was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Doug's second show, or Doug and John's second show. So we get into the Hilton, and Mom goes, come here. And I was a mama's boy. I'm guilty. And she said, come here. And so we walked through the casino, we get to where the showroom is. There was Elvis's costumes, and it was like the Elvis Presley showroom. And there's a beautiful black velour curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady at that time, the captain of the showroom, you know how you would give them a tip to get a good seat.
Right.
She was the captain, and she was an older lady in a tuxedo with a beautiful gray hair and a black bun. Very, very elegant. And my mother walked up like she owned the place, and she said, "Hello, Captain." And the captain said, "Hello, Carol." And she said, "Can my son look through that curtain?" And when the captain pulled the curtain, it was just like a Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory moment. Doug was on stage performing the water levitation. My knees almost gave out. I could not believe that was that little guy right there
in front
of me.
And you were how old at that time?
I was 17.
17.
I couldn't believe that there wasn't a television screen between the two of us.
Two of us.
I couldn't believe it. I went, "Oh, my God, that's him." And then the hoop of fire goes, the water comes back, and you've seen it on the clips, and then da-da-da-da-da, and the water goes into the air, and the captain let go of the curtain, and the curtain just swirled in front of me. She looked down at me, and she said, "I'll see you tomorrow night." And so Mom and I left, and I saw the next seven shows in a row. Doug was basically my babysitter. I saw the 7:30 and the 9:30 every seven shows in a row. Seven shows in a row, so 3 days in a row. And then I saw the first one of the last night, and then we flew out. And ready to cry as the show was. I mean, you see a show seven times, you can feel it. And of course, when he started Things That Go Bump, I'm like, "Oh man, that's it. You know, I can't come back tomorrow. I got to go home now."
Yeah.
And so that's basically when I first saw him perform. And then after I'd seen the first show, maybe the second show that next night, I told Mom, I said, I've got to, "Where does he go? I have to meet him. I want him to sign my Houdini book." Yeah. I had my Houdini book Charles Reynolds wrote.
Right.
And I said, "I don't know how to do this." And Mom goes, "Well, let me go talk to the pit boss because they know me here."
Yeah.
Well, they knew her as a
gambler.
Crazy slot woman.
Yeah.
She had the real big right arm, you know, the slot machines. Arnold Schwarzenegger, right arm.
Before he pushed the buttons.
Oh, yeah. No, she didn't push buttons.
Yeah,
she had a glove, man. She had a glove. They were serious business.
Okay.
They're serious, like serious women with bingo. These were serious with them slot machines. So she goes to the pit boss and she said, "My son wants to meet Doug Henning." And he said, "Carol, I'm sorry. That's just not possible." And here we go. She goes, "Come here." And I follow her. And she walks up right to a house phone. She picks up the house phone. She says, "Doug Henning's dressing room, please." Handed me the phone and walked off. And Doug picked up the phone.
Wow.
And I said, "Hello, my name is Chip Romero. I'm from Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm a magician. I love Doug Henning. I said, I've got the book. I'd give anything if I could just find him or meet him. I just want him to sign my book." And I said, "Is Doug there?" And he said, and this will make sense in a moment, he goes, "No, Doug's getting ready for the show." And I said, I saw the show earlier, and it says no pictures. I said, "I want to take pictures." I said, "Does he rehearse, like during the day when he rehearses? Can I come in and take some pictures? I really want to take some pictures." He goes, "Well, no, he doesn't really rehearse." I said, "So I guess I can't take pictures." No, you can't. I said, "Are you sure this isn't Doug Henning? I mean, it sounded exactly like him." And he goes, "They're really not supposed to let you call back here." And I said, "Is there any way that I could meet you?" He goes, "Of course." And he said, "Where are you going to be?" And I said, "I'm staying in the hotel." He said, "Oh, how long?" And he goes, "Okay." He says, "Well, tomorrow night." And he told me about where an exit sign was around this bar.
Yeah.
And he said, "Tomorrow night, if you're there." And by the way, his set was 55 minutes exact. That's what his, before John Davidson came out, he did 55 minutes. And so as soon as he went off from bump, I left and left John in the middle of his act and went to this exit. And the guy, I guess he could tell I looked like a dork with a Houdini book, you know, excited.
Look at her, yeah.
And he said, "Are you Chip?" And I said, "Yeah." He walked me back, and Doug opened the door and walked out with already an 8x10 that he had signed to me, and it was the 8x10 with the three Lincoln rings.
Oh, yeah.
Which is beautiful, because it's a beautiful picture because it frames his face. It's a phenomenal 8x10, actually. And I handed it to him, and of course, I didn't know what to say. What do you say to the greatest magician in the world when I'm just a kid? I mean, I'm a plumbing salesman in Lake Charles, Louisiana, wanting to be a professional magician. So I have no idea what to tell him. Anyways, incredibly cordial to me, very, very nice. And I had my telematic, the tele-instamatics and little crazy little cameras.
Yep.
That's what I had, a little tele-instamatic. And I said, "Can you get a picture of me and Doug?" And of course, I put my arm around him, and we're shaking hands like we're buddies, you know, because that's what teenagers do. You know, that's my friend.
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy takes a picture, and so I leave, and I'm walking out, and I find Mom. Mom's over there playing the slot machines, and I showed her the 8x10, and she goes, "Boy, that's something else." And she says, "Come here." And she takes the 8x10 and she goes to the slot machine's host and said, "Don't ever tell me my son can't meet Doug Henning," and turned around and walked away. So that's my mama's boy and my attitude.
Wow.
Get this. The picture was fuzzy.
Yeah.
Whatever the picture was taken, the camera moved.
Yeah.
I was ready to cry over that.
Yeah.
But we went back 4 months later, and I picked up the phone this time myself and said, "I'm Chip Romero from Lake Charles, Louisiana, and I really need to talk with Doug Henning." He picked up the phone. He said, "How you been? How are you?" And I said, "Man," I said, "my picture was fuzzy." I said, "Can we get another picture?" He goes, "Of course." He goes, "You know where to go." And so I went back. And I think we later figured out about 20-something years later that William Kennedy was the guy that took that picture.
Oh.
And who later became my illusion builder.
And so he builds your illusions now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's okay. Now I'll give you the how I got the Henning collection. And that is because as I begin working shifts, I begin making substantial amounts of money that now I can afford to do business with these people.
Mm-hmm.
These people do business with television budgets. Well, cruise ship budgets are much smaller. Mm-hmm. I never had a backer or a producer. I mean, I'm my own producer. What I would do is I'd work 6 weeks, save enough money, and go buy an origami or go buy a Blamo or go buy a perforation. So that's what I did. I did it one illusion at a time, which is important. You can't learn them all at once unless you have a lot of help.
Right.
Unless you have Joni Spina, you can't do that, right? And so anyway, so I saved my money, and now I could deal with my heroes. And Jim and I became buddies, and I bought a lot of his illusions. And Johnny built my origami and my pole levitation.
Mm-hmm.
Willie built my elevator. And so at any rate, that's how I acquired that stuff. So Jim knew me from that, knew how much I loved Doug. So when that third auction came around, that's when I got the call. And the cruise line wouldn't let me off. They said, no, you can't leave. And I said, look, I do my show on Wednesday. I'll fly myself out on Thursday. I said, I have to be on a landline. On my expense. I said, I have to be on a landline Friday at noon. Because the way it worked is you could call all week, and Friday at noon, those two guys could fight it out.
Gotcha.
It was done over the phone with Willie.
Yeah, okay.
And so I had to be on a landline. This is before everybody had cell phones.
Sure.
I mean, a few people had them. Rich people had them.
Yeah.
I sure as hell didn't have
mm-hmm.
one. And so I got in a big fight with the cruise line and mouthed off to the entertainment director because my numbers were so high, and this is not an exaggeration. I had the highest numbers of that company ever.
Wow.
And I knew that my numbers would speak for myself. Well, I learned I was just a number. They fired my butt. I went home crying, but I still bought 8 of the 14 pieces of the auction.
Yeah.
And then I called Princess Cruises, where I have a lot of friends, and I was back on a ship in 3 weeks. So,
so there,
it worked out.
Those guys,
now, I don't know if you take chances like that when you turn 50,
yeah.
but you certainly take chances like that when you're about 27,
wow.
so you're
what
26.
Stories.
But yeah, so I want to thank the TAOM. This means a lot to me, and you know this. All of you guys are some of my friends. Mark Jensen was the guy. This was Mark Jensen and Dal Sanders brainstorm. They said, man, we want Chip to do this at one of our conventions, and we want him to dress up like Doug Henning. I told Dal I wasn't dressing up like Doug Henning, but I would really consider it. And, of course, Mark and I are so close because we're collector buddies.
Yeah.
Mark looks after me a lot in the collections, and we look after each other.
Yeah.
But he's the smarter of the two. Let's be honest, all right? Always surround yourself with people that are smarter than you.
That's right.
And so Mark said, man, I really want you to do this. And, the props that were seen yesterday hadn't been performed in over 27 years. 27 years in
it's
and
been in your house.
For about the last 12 or 15, yes. And and I want to thank everybody that was here. And again, I numerous to mention, but I swear half of that audience was people I know almost personal on a personal level.
Yeah.
I mean, and
just
and so friends from the Austin Magic Auctions and all the fun in Houston. And so once again, I'd like to say that this is the only place I would have done this.
Well,
because I'm an honorary Texan. This is the only place I'd have done this. At the
It's beyond friends. It's almost like family here, I think, you know, because we know each other so well. So it's really great. Thank you, Chip. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that you live by? What is something that's important to you?
My favorite word in the world is magic.
Magic.
I know that that's just silly, but no, that's my favorite word's magic. I know. Hey, I read a magic book. I read some part or some of a magic book every day of my life. Not one day in my life I haven't picked up a magic book and read a chapter or something. It's just that's what I do.
That's great.
If I had a favorite word, I guess it'd be magic.
It'd be magic, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're getting ready over here to start doing some rehearsals for the show here very shortly. And this
Duke to Tom Mulock.
Yeah, so there you go. Okay, that's going to be fun. Okay, we got some more to talk to a little bit later. Thank you very much, Chip Romero. And
thanks,
for the magic
Tom,
word, Scotty out.
Blazing Saddles, and he just kind of took me under his wing and said, come on, go with me, boy, and I'm going to show you the ropes. And he did. When I first met Slim, he and Maggie lived out in Thousand Oaks. And after about 4 or 5 years, they moved up to Central California, up in by Yosemite. When they moved up there, they moved everything out of their house. They had 4 or 5 big trailers taking stuff up there. And their house was set off, back off the road, and they were, as they were unloading all their stuff, they looked down the road. It was a white gravel road. They looked down this white gravel road, and here come a car down there, a pickup, pulled right into their driveway, and an elderly couple, like Slim and Maggie, got out of this pickup and walked up there, said, they didn't know swim from a pine tree, you know. They said, we're on the welcoming committee for this part of the county, and we'd just like to welcome you folks. And they gave them all the coupons for a free haircut and all that sort of stuff, you know. And they said, and listen, we're going to have a masquerade party this weekend. We'd love for you folks to come to the thing. And all right. Well, the people leave. And Slim says, God, we're going to go to this thing, a masquerade party. What are we going to go as? We don't have a costume. And Maggie says, Maggie was great. She could make anything. She was quite a seamstress. She says, I'll make something. Don't worry about it. So come Saturday afternoon, Slim says, well, did you fix us a costume? She says, yeah, we're going to go as a cow. You're gonna go as the front end of the cow, and I'm gonna go as the rear end of the cow. She had made this outfit, and he says, okay. So they got into this outfit. He's dressed as the front end of the cow. She's the rear end of the cow. They jump in their car and they take off down the road. About a mile down the road, they had a flat tire. Well, they jump out. He's dressed as the front end of the cow. She's dressed as the rear end of the cow. And they're dragging up to the car, and she's getting the tire out for him. And all of a sudden, they hear, burum, 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 burum. And they look around, and there's a bull. He'd come through the fence and was running right straight down the road, right at them. And, of course, Maggie says, oh, Slim, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, Slim says, well, Maggie, I'm going to find some grass to munch on. You better brace yourself. Oh, boy. Well, that's really not a true story, but Slim always told it on himself. So I just stole it. Slim was the greatest guy. He never saw him act. He did Slim. All right, God rest. All right, we're going to move on right now. Hold on, I wish I was good. I'm not good, but I play a lot. Anybody want to play one?
Right here.
All right. Let's see. About 25 years ago, when I was living in Los Angeles, I did that for 23 years. A bunch of us were invited up to the Paris Country Club here in Paris, Texas, for a celebrity tournament. There were about 20 of us came from Los Angeles, and then others around the state of Texas. I remember that's where I first met Bone Phillips. Great guy. Great Texan. A wonderful person. Well, we drive up there on a Saturday morning to the Paris Country Club, and I want to hit some balls. And I said, where's the driving range? Well, we don't have a driving range. Oh, okay. But there's one just right down the street. We'll have somebody drive you down there, and you can get a few balls. I said, okay. So they get a car, and I drive down there. And it's not a driving range. It was a pasture. Taking a bunch of weed eaters or something and cutting out all the grass out there, and they stuck a little, it must have been like a 12 by 20 little building out in front of the thing, and said balls that are going up. I walk in there and get some balls, and this little lady is sitting behind a card table, 4 foot by 4 foot, just like this. She weighed about 800 pounds. She says, can I help you? I said, yes, ma'am, I'd like to get a bucket of balls. Well, we ain't got no buckets of balls. I said, well, she says, what we do is we got jugs of balls. And I said, yeah. She says, what we do is, and she wanted this long thing, she showed me a jug. She says, what we do is we take a gallon jug, we cut the top off the gallon jug, we put the yellow balls in the jug, and that's what we got right here. How many jugs you want? I said, well, just one jug will do. So I get a jug of bottles, and I take them out there. Got me a few minutes. I hit them, and I come back in and bring the jug back to her. And this little lady, she says, "Listen, Herb," and this is exactly the way she said it. She said, "Are you one of them sea lambs?" She said, "Sea lambs. Are you one of them sea lambs that's here for the golf tournament?" I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I guess I am." She says, "Oh, isn't that nice?" Said, "What would you sign one of our jugs here? I'll put it right up here. Everybody comes in here and say, 'Hey, what is that right there?' And I'll tell them that you came in and signed it." And I said, "Well, I'll be glad to do this. Can I make it to you?" And she says, "Oh, yes, my name is Tilly." And I said, "Well, okay, Tilly, let me sign this thing." So she gave me a Sharpie, and I put, "To Tilly, you have the greatest jugs." And she said, "Thank you." Okay, we are really moving on. You have seen great acts here.
Well, again, it's Scott Wells with Magic Word Podcast, and we've just finished the evening show, and before another show begins, we're going to have a star of that later show, Tom Mullica. Hi there, Tom.
Hello there, Scott. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. You did a great job last night.
Thank you very much.
I want to ask about Red Skelton. I remember going to Tom Foolery so many years ago, and you had pictures of him. When did you first physically meet him?
97.
Did he come to the show to come to Atlanta? Or
yeah.
How
did you? Okay. Yes, he did.
And that's when you first got enamored by him, or did you just get when you were a kid?
As a kid, I really got off on him, too, as a kid.
Yeah, watching him on television then all the time?
Yeah.
Now, did you start kind of mimicking him whenever he was
younger? Yeah, I emulated him like most kids do. When they see a comic, they emulate him, and he was the one I emulated. And I just kept doing it, and when I was doing a magic lecture in Washington, and there was a question-answer at the end of my performance, and some kid said, "What would you be doing if you weren't doing magic?" And I had never thought of that before, and I thought about it for a couple minutes, and I said, "I'd like to do a tribute to Red Skelton someday, because he was a great influence on my career," and that's really where it all came from.
Now, when he came to Tom Foolery, were you surprised, or had you been inviting him, and he finally showed up?
I invited him, but I was surprised he came.
Yeah. Was he just touring the nation, or was he retired?
No, he was doing a show at the Fox Theater. He was
working
at the Fox Theater,
How old was he at that time?
Oh, I'd say 72 or 3, something like that. What are they playing up there?
This is the stuff
I should be watching.
I think you should. Sorry.
Nice talking to you.
That's right, Tom. Sorry. It's an homage to you. Here we go.
I heard Tom Mullica.
Yeah. Interview in 10 minutes. Okay. That was from Joan Caesar. This is all for you.
Shut up!
I just want to finish up over here. We kind of were starting to talk to Tom real quickly, but there were a couple of questions I still wanted to ask.
Okay.
We're still on Red Skelton. We were talking about, we just met him. Of course, you went in talking about this in the interview, which these people, online will be
heard,
able to hear. But you had said that you saw Red Skelton when he first came and met him, and you had invited him to come
because
he happened to be there in town. My question really has to do with the routines that you do. Now, are these all of his routines that you have seen on kinescope or television or live, and or do you ever add your own touches? I mean, there are Tom Mullica bits that you have
I've
in there.
I've thought of that, but I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
I've thought of just taking some ideas and doing my own, but so far they're all his.
I would think that once you get so much into a character, that you can start to think like that character, and so he would probably do something like that, like some artists would study under Chihuly, and they'll start making glass, like Chihuly, but it's not Chihuly.
Yeah.
So you've thought about?
I've thought about it. I just haven't done it yet because he's got so much of his own material. If I get tired of something, I just take something else. Do that for a while.
And you call those, where have you seen those kinds of, again, from television?
All of it. TV, DVDs.
All kinds of research.
One of the things I use the most is when the Mike Douglas show used to be on, they'd have a weekly a weekly guest host, and Red did it for a week, and that was in the 80s, and that's when the original Betamax machines came out, and I had one of those, and I recorded that whole week of Red on the Mike Douglas show.
Yeah.
So that's where most of the personal stuff and the stories came from, although he did some of the routines on television, but a lot of the personal stuff he talked about, those stories came from that week that he was on Mike Douglas.
Right. Yeah. I understand. And so you were saying during the interview here this evening that Branson has changed, as has Las Vegas, as far as audiences being down a lot. And so really that it's just a winter season that you're doing that now.
Right.
So
we'll be traveling the rest of the year.
And you'll be doing, you're starting to do magic again, did I hear?
Well, I'm working FISM in 2015.
Yep, I'll be there in Italy.
They asked me if I'd put the act together. And it'll be the act, but it won't be with the cigarettes and the napkins.
But the tomfoolery act, basically.
Well, no, my stage act that I used to with the bubble gum and all that stuff.
Sans the cigarettes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Smoking my thumb. And I'll still have cigarettes, but I'm not going to do the cigarettes and napkins again. It's just too much for my health.
I would think so, kind of, yeah.
Exactly.
And so that's what you're going to start to do, is some more magic you ever thought about? There was a tomfoolery in Vegas for a while.
That didn't work because the guy that I was subleasing from never finished the building. When he told me he was going to open, it was like 8 months later, they still hadn't opened, and I couldn't afford not to be doing anything while he was waiting to open the place, and it just didn't work. It just was one of the only failures I've ever had.
Well, okay. Didn't mean to bring that up.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, that's just life. I mean, you know, that you learn from failures, certainly, and move on. And it was interesting that you said that you, during this interview with Johnny, with a question about someone, you said a young man had asked, you know, what else you'd do if you weren't doing magic, and that's kind of what inspired you a little bit?
Yeah, I said I think of doing a tribute show to him, and then when the time came when he passed away, I took it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, going to let you go over here, but one last thing is the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so my question to you is, what is your magic word?
So what, like a Shazam kind of thing?
No. What's your life motto? What's your slogan? What do you live by? What's important to you? What's your chi?
Let me think.
They brought... I want to say it was like a small...
Well, do you remember at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, when George Bailey got that book signed from the angel,
Clarence,
and he wrote in his book, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's something like, a man is not a failure who has friends. It was something like that. Next time you watch the movie, but it's basically saying, if you got friends, that's about all that you really need in life.
So really, friends are it. And
yeah,
like you were
really
saying, during the time when you had cancer and you're going through treatment,
even,
all of the cards and letters you had, the friends that really kept you buoyed up.
Because I know a lot of people that have a lot of money and they live alone and they're sad people.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, not have so much money and have fun and make life, you know, make life fun.
Friends as well.
That's right.
That's right. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thanks. So for the magic word, that was Tom Mulligan. Scotty out. Okay, well, again, Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. And again, we finished the interview that Johnny had with Tom Mulica, and I have Johnny and Pam here. Johnny, Pam, good to have you. And your little
girlies.
Babies.
We have our little girlies.
That's
yes.
right, little pups. And what are their names?
Pearl and Grace.
Pearl and Grace. Awesome. So you guys had a great... you can. There's a lot of conventions and everything, but
this
is,
I believe, our fifth TAOM. We've always had a great time at the TAOM. It's always been a wonderful convention.
This was superior.
It was pretty
outstanding. You guys were very funny.
Now, you guys in last night did Great Tom Sony and Company, and you know, I was at Magic Live, you know, just a couple of weeks where you, quote, retired the act.
But that was the
Bird Act.
The Bird Act. No, I understand that. So that's the last of the Bird Act, but this is a different act.
The act we'll be doing.
Continue
from here on.
And we add our six-card repeat
to
it, perhaps.
Except I forgot the gimmick. I left it plugged in the wall and forgot to bring it.
Oops, okay, well.
So we did a little shorter time last night.
Well, that was good because the show was long, but nevertheless, that's what it's going to be. So it's so much easier to do.
Then what about the bowling ball? As I recall, that was...
Oh, no.
Well, that's what... I could still do the Bird Act. You know, the only reason we really retired it is it's 25 minutes of folding silks and so forth. And traveling with the birds is getting harder. But... the bowling ball, because I now at my age have COPD, the running back and forth. I look like Del Rey at the end of his act, you know, going. I remember Del Rey used to say, "Now, when I finish the act, don't think I'm dying or anything." But that's what poor Del would go. So I don't want to. I did the Winter Carnival of Magic, and before we got off, I said, "Pam, I think I'm going to keel over."
And I said, "No, you're not." I took his arm and we said,
"She walked me into the wings," and I was going. But also part of it was I had gained a little weight and hadn't been working that much. And
from the cruise ships, I guess, eating food.
No, just from not doing the act. The act keeps you trim, you know.
When you're perspiring that much in the lights and the
No, but it's, you know, there are eight of us in that suit. And when seven of us say one of us has to go on a diet, I know who they're talking to.
And that magician's getting skinnier by the minute.
And the minute we got off stage, she said, "Undo your pants,
cummerbund,
but your cummerbund and the top buttons on you." And then that was so that was part of it.
And then everybody said, "Oh my God, John's dying!" And then he went around going, "Hi, let's get these pictures done, and here's your autograph."
That was fine.
That was absolutely hilarious.
But the running back and forth does get me short of breath. So I just said, "We're retiring the bowling ball and the birds."
You know, have the birds ever really bothered you? You know, like the kind of thing that David Oliver, you know,
I've never, you know, I've had birds since the late 40s. Mm-hmm. For the last 2 years, they've been in our living room.
Oh, my goodness, really?
Well,
because
the
heat has been...
Daytime.
Well, in Vegas,
and
I guess,
old.
Yeah.
My bird's between 23 and 26
years old.
How many
do you keep at a time?
We have about 13 right now.
Yeah, 13 now.
And we lost a couple that were 27 and 28. Mm-hmm. Almost all of our birds live to be 27, 28.
And you rotate the birds, I guess, just like Siegfried and Roy rotated their lions.
No, I use the same birds all the time for the same tricks. That way they're inculcated into doing the same thing over and over. There's no surprises. Yeah, I have a swing bird.
Okay. I remember you telling me a story, I think, once many years ago about how that you had used to carry your birds overseas by just putting them in the harness and carrying them on with you on the planes.
Yes. We
smuggled them everywhere.
We smuggled three dogs and eight birds all over the world. We knew how bad the TSA was until 9/11.
Oh, really. Yeah. Now, it's much more difficult to do anything like that if you can at all.
Well, the dogs are not a problem because they're actually service dogs.
Okay.
And the birds aren't a problem. The only thing we have to do, this country is fine domestically, but getting out of the country is difficult.
Yeah.
So that's the other reason. Every time I've lately had to go out of the country, I had to use someone else's birds. And that's a little hairy. You never know.
A little iffy. You don't know how exactly.
You don't know how
you spend some time training them whenever you arrive, like, let's say, in some foreign country?
No, I just take them and trust the guy who says they've been used. Yeah.
Because I've heard whenever that you're cruising, I know, from one place or another. So, you know, sometimes you have to leave some birds, you know, in one place.
Yes.
And you pick them up the next time you come around.
Yeah.
You know, while they're in quarantine. You know, in
every time I left the country, my birds were quarantined for 30 days at least, you know.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. One last question, because I know that time is of the essence right now, but just kind of where you have been has been one of the most exciting, you know, places that you've ever visited. It may not necessarily be a magic experience. It's something that you really enjoy and a place you like.
Venice.
Well, Venice. Yeah. We loved Venice. Yeah, it's
for
one
reason?
Of the most romantic cities in the world.
And beautiful art.
Beautiful, and, you know, it's going back in time because they have these little walkways that wend your way through besides the canals.
So you like to try to get back there when you can?
Whenever we can, but we haven't been.
I'm done.
You're finished?
Yeah. I've been around it twice.
Tired traveling?
I'm not doing it.
The last time we were there, Tommy Wonder was living there. And
oh,
so
that was a while back.
Time.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, yep. Well, he was here one time, you know, featured in TOM Fort Worth at a convention. That was
one of the greatest magicians
great
of
mind.
Our time.
Yep. It was sad that he left so early, too.
Yeah. I was the first one he called when he discovered he had.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? What's Johnny Thompson's magic word? It wouldn't.
Eldi Baranti Faso Fico Formio Spoko Bado Glocal Glo. That was my magic word when I was a kid. I still remember
so
it.
Still remember it. You don't use it anymore.
I assume it's Polish.
No,
it's just double talk.
Okay. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, John.
All right.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Okay. For the Magic Podcast, the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out.